I'm talking about Ganetti, which is virtualization management, and I said I would skip all the advertisement why virtualization is great and you need it, and start with write the situation how you would build your virtualization solution. So again, you explain that instances is the name we at Ganetti use to name virtual machines, and I'll use these terms interchangeably. Again, you say you start with buying a lot of physical machines with all with their own hard drive and so on. Then you choose some virtualization solution, say Xen. And then you also care about storage to have that replicated, and say you choose DRBD. So all nice, all works. And you might have noticed I haven't mentioned Ganetti so far. The reason is that all that works without Ganetti. The point of Ganetti is to make it easier to get there, because it's a lot of work to set it all up by hand. I mean, just one DRBD drive, you would have to create logical volumes on two machines, sync DRBD, assign that to the virtual machine, and so on. So one thing Ganetti does is just to provide you a uniform interface, say, to various hypervisors. So Xen is the most tested one, then KVM is used a lot, and also to your storage solutions. Typically, you would use some replicated storage, say, DRBD, but for some instances, it doesn't matter if data get lost because there isn't anything important on it anyway. Say a name server, so you would have enough copies of the data anyway. So you could choose logical volume, just a plain logical volume. Yeah. So the development, what in? So sorry, the development. I have no idea, so I'm not working with it. But one point to notice is that Ganetti tries to be independent about the underlying either virtualization or storage solution and just provide a uniform interface to that, to storage and also to networking. So there's different, say, you could bridge it, you could just route it, and so on. And it also provides a lot of kind of additional value or additional help to get it right, like policies which virtual machines are allocated at which physical nodes, so that the machines that need a lot of virtual CPUs are on the hardware with a lot of CPUs, the ones with big files are where you have your big storage and so on, and also to kind of make balanced use of your cluster. I said that. We have policies on the size of instance that you don't accidentally do it wrong. And you have also a policy which is called tag exclusion. So you can assign tags to virtual machines, and then Ganetti will always make sure that these machines end up on different physical machines. For example, you don't want to have both your name servers on the same physical machine, because if that goes away, then, well, suddenly the service goes away. And it also helps you to stay in a situation where everything's working. So say one of your nodes goes away, something breaks, some hardware. If you have a lot of machines, that tends to happen often. Then what you want to do is to migrate, or actually fail over your instances to other nodes. Ganetti can do that for you. It's just say, evacuate that node, get rid of all the machines. And there's also some subtle point to notice going back to policies. If you use a classical DRBD setup, so one primary, one secondary, there's only one node where you can immediately start your virtual machine again. It's that one where you have the second copy of your hard drive of the virtual machine. So already when allocating the machine, you should keep in mind that some node might break and you reserve enough memory that when you fail over the instance, it could immediately start up without having overcommitment on memory. So that's also part of the policy, keeping it balanced so that if one machine goes away, you immediately can fail over the machines without too much interruption. Then the next step is you would evacuate the node, saying, oh, now I have the machines running again, but now the storage is degraded, so I would resync to a different node. And these kind of tasks that Ganetti kind of coordinates and does automatically for you. And there are other things like rebalancing the cluster. If you add just new machines, say, well, I've got these new machines, make good use of the hardware. And there are also kind of a lot of small tasks like keeping remembering which instances should be running, which should be shut down, so that if your underlying node suddenly reboots because of power failure or whatever, the correct instances get restarted, and more of these little features. So I think the next is to give you a bit of the feeling how Gonetti looks and feels. So the typical, or the easiest way to interact with Gonetti is over the command line interface, you SSH into the machine. You say you want a new cluster, and you provide some data, so cluster init. One thing you can provide, so it's optional, is a secondary IP address of your node. The idea is you have, you might want to use Gonetti in such a way that all external communication to the virtual machines is over one IP block and probably Ethernet device or separate VLAN. And all the internal traffic for DRBD replication is over a different network. So if you want that, you specify the IP address of the secondary network, and you specify a name of the cluster, which here in the example deliberately is chosen as a full qualified host name. The idea is that this resolves to an IP address that is not used for anything else. And that is the canonical way to address the cluster. As I said, nodes can break, and you will only the node which coordinates the cluster will always use that IP address so that you can have a canonical name to SSH into the cluster, even so if the node you originally set up your cluster goes away. You add a couple of other nodes, again saying which node to add and maybe the secondary IP address if you use that feature. And then you're good to add instances. You say you want to add an instance, you provide the type of storage template you want to use, in this case DRBD. You say which operating system you want to use. You say which, how many disks you want, how they're laid out. In the simplest case, you just say, well, one big disk, give it a size. You might specify tags so that you have a policy that these that certain machines don't end up on the same physical node. And again, specify a name. Other example how you would work with Gonetti is, say you have a node and you want to change some hardware on it. You want to get it out of the cluster, maybe repair a fan or do some small maintenance. So you would first mark the node as drained. That will tell Gonetti that you don't want any more instances coming to that node. So if you allocate a new instance, Gonetti will take care of. Oh, by the way, that's something also interesting to notice. I haven't specified where I want this virtual machine to run on. Gonetti figures out a suitable solution for itself. It just looks at the cluster, which machines we have, and tries to keep the cluster balanced and definitely respect the tagging restrictions and other policies you might have set up. So again, so you said you want to have a node out of the cluster. You tell Gonetti this node is trained. Please don't add any new stuff on that node. Then you say, well, migrate all instances off the node. So with DRBD, you can do live migration, so the instance won't even notice. You say if you want to have the node completely off the cluster, you probably would change all, get rid of all secondary usage of that node. That is, if you have DRBD set up, the instance might be running on a different node, but you have a replica of the disk on that node, and you tell to replicate that on a different node so that the node is completely unused, and you mark it as offline. Then Gonetti will no longer try to communicate to that node in any way. So you can, it's safe to turn it off or do some repair. Going back on, you just say it's online, and probably since you have a node completely unused, you would tell Gonetti, well, please rebalance the cluster, make good use of the new resource. Okay, so how's that all built up? We've seen, how would you build such a thing? Well, we've seen the command line interface, it's this GNT cluster, GNT node, and so on, commands you've just seen. And you realize that there's a lot of state you have to remember, which instance we have already, what is my policy, and so on. So you have a central place for that. We have a daemon running, which takes the authoritative notion of the current configuration. And the other thing is to keep in mind, some jobs you don't want to run at the same time, because they access the same resource, so you don't want to have too many LVM manipulation going concurrently. So that's why we have some notion of locking, and the jobs get just submitted to a queue. Well, if you have such an architecture anyway, it's very easy to add a remote API so that you can access the cluster without logging into, SSHing into it, just over some RESTful interface. That is useful if you have a lot of clusters and you want to maintain them from a central point. Well, comes easy, so it's just added. The next thing is realize this all happens on the master node, but you have several nodes involved. For DRBD, at least two, and probably both of them are not the master node. So on every node, we have a daemon, which we call the node daemon, that does the actual work, and there's where the abstraction of the backends happens. So the hypervisors, the block devices. Internal RPC to that node. And then the next thing is, well, all looks nice, works, but there's one thing which currently is not redundant in that setup currently shown, and that's the configuration. But that's also a lot of things to know, which logical volumes belong to which instance, where they are located, and so on. So we better have a redundant copy of that as well. So that's why certain nodes are designated master candidates. They also have a full copy of all live data. So if the master goes away, you can immediately continue working with your cluster without losing any configuration data. Again, as said, the instances run completely independent of Garnetti, so you can turn Garnetti off. That doesn't hurt, but you still want to not lose your configuration. Well, and if you have the configuration on several nodes anyway, why not add a daemon serving that to the outside world to get load of the master and also have a more reliable source of the live configuration? Simple protocol. You ask all the master candidates and get the most useful answer, and they are just versioned and take the newest answer you get. And it's HMAC signed so that you don't get spurious answers. And, well, speaking of configuration, to get all these querying of the configuration daemon started, you need a list of nodes that belong to the cluster and some certain other static information. And that kind of information that changes rarely is replicated just to all nodes as a simple flat file. So that's the basic architecture of Garnetti at the moment. And just since I mentioned roles, I want to just be clear about the various roles a node can have. Usually a node uses both roles, so administrative node and useful node hosting virtual machines. So there are two roles. One role is VM host being a virtual machine capable node. That is the nodes that make the useful part of your cluster. And they're organized in groups. So essentially arbitrary assigned to groups. But that is useful because you specify policies by group, and also virtual instances are only moved within a group. So reasons could be certain, the network topology, that within a group is the same bridging domain, or also by physical location, saying you don't want replication traffic for DRBD over different cities. So that way you group your nodes. That's a node group, and these are VM-capable nodes, which are the main part of Garnetti. And besides that, you have some administrative nodes. Typically, these nodes also host virtual machines. Otherwise, there's not much they do. Start probably from, start bottom up. So you have some policy saying which nodes you're happy with to become the master. Policy just you don't want your configuration at outside a certain location, or you want these nodes to be easily accessible. Usually, there's no harm in designing every node being a master node. Then there are some nodes, typically a small number, 5, 10, that have a full copy of the live configuration. These are the master candidates, and they can always take over the role of the master should something happen. And there's one single master which coordinates all the work Garnetti does. And the other states I mentioned are kind of orthogonal to these two bits. It's just how available a node is. Hopefully, most of your nodes are online, so they can do useful work. A node can be marked as offline, saying, well, don't even try to contact that node, it won't happen. So Garnetti completely ignores it, and there's this strange state saying, well, I planned this node to go offline, so please don't put any more machines on it. And I will most probably, the next step, eradicate that node. So there's one thing I haven't talked about, and that's the guest operating systems. Garnetti is completely agnostic about which systems you want to run on your virtual machines, which means it doesn't do anything useful if it allows everything. So instead, it expects an instance of the guest OS interface to be present for every operating system you want to use. That's very simple. On every node, or on every VM-capable node, you have one directory for every guest OS you care about. And this directory, you have to provide certain files. The API version of Ganetti you're referring to, file containing, I think, the number one, and the list of variants of that operating system you have. Usually, it could be just one name default, but you could say, well, there are certain operating systems that are very easy. Say, I want to run Debian, but this one should be kind of configured as a file server or a name server or whatever. And then you have to provide executables doing the job, and they get all the information they need over the environment. So most important, the OS variant they're running, the hypervisor, and the devices that eventually should surface disk. So you take from the mind with this block device, please make it a disk that a virtual machine can run on. And these, the most important thing is the create task and should then take care of everything. So there are a couple of OS definitions existing. There's one which is kind of distinguished because it's developed as part of the Ganetti project itself. It's called dbootstrap, and as the name says, it's a glorified call to dbootstrap. And the glorification is you first have to partition the block device and add a file system. And after having called that, you might also want to do things like setting the host name. There is a more elaborate operating system. An instance of the operating system is called Cinefa Image. It's developed by Gianet. There, the idea is there you start to help a virtual machine that, no, do the right. You take the device, you add a base image of your operating system on that, and then you start to help a virtual machine from a different operating system potentially that gets the target disk and some instructions of customization. So this virtual machine has a virtual floppy with the instruction on how to customize that. And then in that helper machine can do whatever you want. It's properly insulated and provides a lot of means to customize your virtual machine. Oh, in case you wonder why there's so much fuss about customizing your virtual machine, so one very basic form of customization is adding an SSH key so that the person you're provisioning the virtual machine for can actually access it. And there are a couple of others I'm not very familiar with. One image-based one developed at the Oregon State University Open Source University, and a list of others, so quite a lot going on. And now we're at customization, and Helge will tell you more about how to customize Ganetti and make it useful for you.
Hello. Hi, I'm Helga. Also, welcome from my side to this talk. Klaus gave you an overview of what Ganetti can do and how its architecture looks like. And I don't know if you know Ganetti, knew Ganetti before, but maybe you're considering like using it for your organization. And it might look good for you, but maybe there are some things that you would like to be able to tweak in order to make it work in your environment. And there are several ways to do that. These are not particularly new features, but I think they're interesting, and that's why we present them here. So one thing is hooks. So all the operations that you can do with Ganetti, like all the GNT something command lines that you just saw, they create a Ganetti operation or job, as we call it. And you can customize each of those jobs by providing hook scripts that are run before or after the operation. And the ones before the operation are, for example, used to authorize something, so you might want to make sure that the virtual machine that you're providing for this department is actually allowed to get it, or anything that can be checked. And the thing is, the scripts that run in the pre-phase of an operation, if they fail, then Ganetti doesn't actually carry out the operation. For the post-phase scripts, we don't look at the exit code. they are just used for to lock something in external systems. You might want to build something for the virtual machine that you provided, or you want to set passwords afterwards or something like that. And yeah, the examples here, cluster verify is the stuff where you can verify the state of your cluster, and maybe you want to add some more tests for that that are specific to your environment and not generally for Ginetti. The other thing is allocation. Klaus briefly mentioned that. When you create an instance with Ginetti, you can either tell it directly on which node to put the instance. But if it's a big cluster, you might not have in mind which node is free or which node has enough capacity or which node is currently overloaded. So you actually want to know, make the cluster know that. So you just tell it, I have this instance, put it somewhere where it fits. And Ginetti comes with a tool for that, which is called the allocator. And it's an interface that's also public, so you can write your own allocator. But I must say, actually, so far, only one implementation exists, which is maintained by the Ginetti team itself. But in theory, you can write your own allocator. So how does this work? So if you create an instance, you ask the allocator, which is a separate binary, hey, where should I put my instance? And it gives you a list of nodes where you can put it. The current implementation looks for, is there enough space? And is the cluster balanced in a way? So you don't want to put all your instances on one node and then have the others idling. The protocol for this is JSON over pipes. The input is the description of the cluster state, and depending on which request, some additional information. The output is, as in the example, a list of nodes where to place the instance, but it depends a bit on the operation. Aside from placing one a new instance, you can ask it to relocate instances, to change node groups. You can use it to relocate several instances at once, if you, for example, want to evacuate a node that's broken, or you, I don't know, want to tidy up your cluster and do a batch job over several instances. So far we showed you stuff that Ginetti can do. This slide is more about what Ginetti can't do. So if you actually want to run it in production, you have to add some more stuff to make it work in the complete environment. And those things are, for example, monitoring. So Ginetti doesn't have its own hardware monitoring system, so you might have something in place like Nagios. Although this is not quite true, in the new versions, we actually come with a monitoring tool that I will describe later. And then the thing is, if something breaks, you have to react to it. Ginetti doesn't do that right away. You might want to have some mechanism to trigger an event. It can be something simple like you page your admin and he has to log in and run a Ginetti command, but you might want to automate that as well. Then, of course, you need some configurations management for the machines that you use, the physical machines and also the virtual machines. You might use something like Puppet, for example. And depending on how you run your cluster, you might have some end users that you provide your virtual machines to. So, and end users might not be able or probably shouldn't use the command line, so you want to have some self-service web interface. And Ginetti doesn't come with that out of the box, but there's an additional project called the Ginetti Web Manager that is maintained by a different group but works well on Ginetti that actually provides this interface. And then you can like use your end users, make them create an instance and resizes and get the access to the console. So how do we use Ginetti in Google? We actually don't use Ginetti for production services, so if you use the Google search engine, you won't hit a server that is in a Ginetti cluster. We use it for internal corporate infrastructure, and I will give some more examples in the next slide. Here we see a schematic of the of a typical cluster. We have different node groups, and a cluster consists of different node groups, and usually we group nodes according to network topology and architecture. So we have one rack with this architecture and another rack with another, and they can all work in the same cluster. We use SSH access, and we have also a web interface that uses the remote API to talk to Ginetti. So if you zoom out of this picture a bit, you get what we call fleet at Google, so the whole set of Genetti clusters that we run. And we have different types of Genetti clusters. One thing is we have a Genetti cluster in every office that runs virtual machines that provide services that need to be local in an office, like, for example, a DNS service. And then we have a couple of Genetti clusters that run developer infrastructure, and they run in the data centers. So, for example, every developer at Google can request a virtual machine for himself for test purposes, to use it as in addition to his workstation or instead of a workstation, or to run some internal service that is not like highly available. Nice thing about this is when you, for example, travel to the US, you don't want to access your virtual machine in a data center in Europe because you have all this latency. So you can request an inter-cluster instance move, and then after 2 weeks when you come back, you can move it back to your own or closest data center. We have a couple of tools that we have also built around Genetti that basically cover the things that I just mentioned that you need to provide in your environment too. So we have a web interface for self-service. We have a system that takes care of the hardware lifecycle, so it keeps track of what is in repair and what's coming back. And we have a monitoring system for that and a configuration management, of course. So since I hope at least some of you already knew Genetti before, I also would like to present some stuff that we are currently working on. So the current release is 2.7. And one feature that we included here is network management. So far you had to keep track of your own IP addresses, make sure that not two instances get the same. So we have some kind of IP address pool and you have to have your network management. And most users in bigger companies had some system for themselves, but now Genetti comes with its own network management. Another thing is exclusive storage. Sometimes you might want to make sure that some things are not overprescribed by instances. So you want to make sure that an instance does not get affected by high I/O load of another instance. So you can make sure that an instance gets only placed on some machine and no other instance gets put there. It's a bit against the philosophy of virtualization, but it still has some of the aspects, so it was actually a need to implement that. Another thing is opportunistic locking. So Genetti works in a way that every operation locks the entities that it needs for this operation to be carried out. So for example, if you want to place a new instance and you don't tell it where exactly which node to put it on, you have to first grab all the locks for all the nodes, then inspect them, and then figure out which one is the node that I actually should put my instance on. And for this, you need to wait till all other operations on those nodes are done so that you can actually have those nodes. This led to the fact that sometimes it was very slow. You have to wait for the instance creation until you can do something else, and sometimes there are more important things to do than instance creation. So opportunistic locking is a change that instead of saying, give me all the nodes and wait for all those, you can say, give me just the nodes that are currently free. That's usually good enough for placing an instance. It comes, of course, a bit with the cost of that your cluster might be slightly imbalanced because, of course, you didn't consider all nodes then. But there's actually also a tool in Genetti that you can rebalance your cluster with, so it's always possible to change that afterwards. Restricted commands is also a nice feature. We sometimes had the problem that if a node has problems that you cannot SSH into it anymore because the SSH daemon was gone or too much load or whatever, and then the only thing that was still working was the node daemon of Genetti. But it doesn't really help, or it didn't help before 2.7. But now we have a way to configure certain commands that you can run via the Genetti node daemon. Of course, it's difficult regarding security, so you have to make sure that's well configured, and of course you cannot run arbitrary commands, that's why it's called restricted commands. Another feature is the monitoring agent. I briefly mentioned that. It's I have a separate slide for that. It's an integrated monitoring service by Genetti. It was started to be implemented in 2.7, and the main part is done in 2.8 and 2.9. It's a new daemon that also runs on every Ganeti node, speaks HTTP. It provides information about the cluster states, including the hardware of the nodes and the instances parameters. And it's broken down into several collectors for different aspects. There's a DRBD collector, a disk status collector, LVM, and instance status, currently only for Xen available. And we currently have a Google Summer of Code project going on that also monitors the CPU load. Then there's Tweet. Historically, Ganeti was developed for LVM and DRBD, so every type of storage that came afterwards was a bit less well integrated, and we work on that to make it more streamlined to work with non-LVM storage. Another feature is downgrading. So far, you could only upgrade from one cluster version to another, and from now on, you can also roll it back in case something breaks. We continued working on the monitoring system. Then we introduced a tool that can detect if something is broken in the cluster and try to repair it. Here's only the beginning of the tool, but I mean it can work with a couple of typical things that break on instances, like one of the storage copies is not available anymore and stuff like that. Then another new tool is HRoller. HRoller was developed because to help with the maintenance of a whole cluster. So for example, you want to update all your nodes, all your physical machines, because there's a kernel update or whatever, and then you need to reboot all your nodes. You of course don't want to reboot all your nodes at the same time, because then your instances have downtime. But you also don't want to reboot one node after another, because that would take way too long. So HRoller is a tool that helps you to partition the nodes in a way that it tells you which nodes are safe to reboot at the same time. So this was developed with DRBD in mind, but it also works for other shared storage. So in DRBD, you always have two copies of the storage. You have the primary and the secondary node. And for example, in this picture, you don't want to reboot node 1 and 3 at the same time, because then that node, that instance that has its storage there would go down. So it makes sure that none of the instances goes down because you reboot the wrong nodes at the same time. And the default mode is also, it's also sure that if you reboot a set of nodes, that not the nodes that take over the instances get overloaded. If you're very paranoid, you can be even more careful and make sure that the secondary storage is moved to a different node before you do the reboot. Otherwise, during the reboot of the secondary, you have a slight break in the redundancy. And if you're very, very paranoid, you might want to actually shut down all your instances and just do an offline maintenance. But even then, you don't want to reboot node 1 and 3 at the same time, because maybe something goes really, really wrong and your disk is shredded, then you have at least one version of one copy of your instance left. There are also options for non-redundant instances. You can either ignore them, or you, for example, if it's just your test instances that don't have replicated storage and you don't care about their downtime, or you cannot schedule those nodes for reboot and you have to do that manually. Also, HRoller does not actually trigger the Ganeti process itself. It just tells you what to do, and you can still have the control as an admin what is rebooted at what time. The current latest release, which is currently in alpha, is 2.9. It comes with DRBD for 8.4 support, and other than that, we worked on the features that I described before. And there's the future. So we have plans. These are really just plans, no promises that this will come very soon. So hot plugging is actually a feature that's currently developed. I have seen some patches on the mailing list. It's also an external contribution, actually. It's not done by us itself, ourselves. Then the thing is, there are automatic updates. So far, you had to install the new version of Ganeti manually and shut down that version and start the new version, and we are now working on making an Eddy update itself, and also make sure that a cluster can work with different nodes being on different Eddy versions, which is currently not so easy. Then we are more working on having more control over the job queue. We have these problems, as I described, with the locking, that some jobs are grabbing too much resources, and sometimes you have like an emergency job that needs to be run before the others, and right now there's not so much control over the queue. So it's basically just a FIFO right now, and we would like to improve the control over the queue itself. Another feature that we have in mind is that to work even more on the storage layer, to generalize it more. Right now you can only have one entity of storage type, so if you want to use file storage, you can only use the same file storage on all of the nodes in your cluster, and we would like to generalize it more that you can configure several storage pools and use them in different node groups on the same cluster. We are in an open source conference here, so we would also like to talk about how Eddy works with the community. Eddy has been around for 6 years. It has been open source for 6 years. It has been around for about 7 years. We have a relatively big community of external users and contributors. Here is a list of people that run Eddy. Of course, ourselves. But there's also GRNet that Klaus mentioned before. This is the Greek Research and Technology Network. They, for example, provided the network component, so they actually provide whole components and not only like small patches. Then there's the Oregon State University Open Source Lab. They actually contributed the open source Eddy Web Manager, so they built the open source web interface. Our development process. We have a time-based release process, one freeze every 3 months. We have the code reviews over the mailing list, and we also do the design reviews over the mailing list. So if you want to write a bigger change or a new component, we write a design doc so that also the external community can also comment on that and point us to their needs, because sometimes people run a different configuration of Eddy than we do internally, so it's very good to have their input. Sometimes when people want to contribute a bigger component, we actually try to keep up the communication really well, and we even do reader conferences with those people to make sure that, no misunderstandings arise, that we, have to redo some stuff or so that everything works well. We also have a public continuous build system, so if you submit a patch and it doesn't really work, we can point you to, we run this, but this doesn't work. Can you please check? So it makes it a lot more easy for us to work with the community. And we have our internal QA, which is a set of test clusters that we actually run automatically a lot of Eddy operations. And the scripts for that are completely public in our repository as well. So you could recreate the test environment if you want to contribute to Eddy as well. We try to be present at many events, on many open source events. So this year we have been at FOSDEM. We have hosted the Xen Hackathon in Dublin this May, together with the guys from Citric. We also took part in Google Summer of Code. And aside from the CPU load monitoring that are already described, we have another project working on better open vSwitch support. There's more events this year, so we actually have our first own little conference, the Ganeticon in Athens. It's next week, so it's a bit short notice, I know, and the registration is already closed, I'm sorry. aside from that, we are on LinuxCon Northern America and Europe. There we give an introductory talk similar to this one. And in November, we are at LISA in Washington, the Large Installation Sysadministration Conference, and there we have a whole day where we give workshops and classes about Eddy, and we're able to go a bit deeper into the details. There's a list of publications available in our wiki, so you can see recordings of old talks. For example, one of the LISA talks from last year is available there. Yes, And with that, I actually would like to conclude. So I hope I made you a bit curious. You can check us out at this URL, or you can just search for Ganeti. And I swear we didn't mess up with the ranking, but we have the first hit, if you put it there. And Klaus and me are around on the FrostCon today and tomorrow, so feel free to approach us. And if you have any questions now, I guess we have some time for that.
And we'll also repeat the question for the recording. So the question was how we are running our servers and whether we only relying on DRBD or have RAID ourselves. And I'm not entirely sure about the whole fleet, but certainly on some we have RAID, on some we don't, on some we just... But in any case, we usually use DRBD on top of whatever RAID or not RAID we have. So the question was, were there any plans for the DRBD9, in particular multi-secondaries? And yes, we do have plans. We are currently working on it. And the hope is that in Ganeti 2, let's say 2.11, it will be implemented. So we're working actively on that, but it takes a bit. So the question was whether in a small cluster where the load has a huge change over the day, whether it's recommended to take down some nodes overnight. So that's not the normal operation of Ganeti. So you probably would make more utilization of your cluster by having some other jobs running or have some other machines that do jobs nightly. But it's not standard practice to remove some nodes over on a daily basis. Even so, it would be possible, but I don't think it would be worth the effort. So the question is whether Ganeti is a direct competitor to OpenStack. Helga, do you?
Well, I don't know OpenStack in much detail, but I think by the time Ganeti was developed, there was not so much competitors around. So the reason why it was developed then was there was not so many alternatives. What I know from OpenStack, it has a bit more features, it's a bit more, the whole thing works right out of the box. But so Ganeti was with the design principle in mind that you can start relatively small. So you can actually have a cluster with just one node, and then you can add another one, and then you have your first replicated storage. And you don't need a big expensive SAN for it. You can use DRBD. So I think the approach was a bit different than for many other competitors, that you can start small, you can use like cheap components. And in that way, I think we distinguish us a bit from the rest. But yeah. I think it's interesting that there are many different systems on the market right now, but we don't really try to build up this. We don't go in this direction because we still have this philosophy so that you can start from a small installation and hack really a lot of stuff yourself to make it fit in your environment.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure how that's integrated in the... I have to repeat the question, sorry. The question was if it's possible to, in the web interface in the Ganeti Web Manager, to come with your own image and let the customer like upload that image and run it on Ganeti. I'm not sure about the web interface itself, but actually the guy, the Greek GRNet people, they provided this SF image to have exactly that, that you have an image of an operating system that you don't trust because it's provided by your customer. And that's why it's booted in an external virtual machine and set up there. And they actually also use the web manager, so I assume it works somehow together, but I think I have to direct your question to the mailing list of their project. I cannot be for sure. More questions?
Over there.
Okay. So the first question was why does the monitoring agent use HTTP and not SMTP, or did you?
SMTP.
I don't really remember the decision, but I think it was because the rest of the daemons also uses HTTP, so it kind of fit, but yeah, I don't remember. And I'm sorry, I didn't understand the second question. The question was why the configuration daemon doesn't use LDAP or something else. I actually don't. I wasn't around when the configuration daemon was written. I don't know. Do you know?
So I think it started that. Well, the configuration is just a simple JSON file, and that's the best way to replicate is just SAP to the other nodes. And the configuration daemon, there the idea was to. Well, it came up later when they say we want. Quick access to the configuration even if the main node is gone. And that's how this protocol came up, saying very simple, little over just UDP packet back and forth. And so I think that the answer is of it was just the easiest way to replicate the file with standard SCP instead of using ready-made database solution because it's very little data compared to other things. And the configuration daemon, the main part was to have multicast, so to ask all the daemons at the same time and take the best answer to see what is still available of the configuration case the main node went away. I think that's how it historically it came up that way. Well, at least to the best of my knowledge. Okay, the question was to comment on the programming language, which are Python and Haskell. Ganeti started off as a small set of Python scripts, and then for these more high-level operations like the allocation and so on, I think one of the developers in his vocation just tried to reimplement in a new language because he wanted to learn Haskell, and it turned out that it worked much better than the Python solution that existed so far. And so that was kept, and it was developed further because we see an advantage in Haskell, especially as a strong guarantees at compile time. So the type system really helps. So the question was whether there is effort to get more from Python to Haskell, and yes, there is effort. So I think the current plan is to migrate almost everything to Haskell except for the tools abstracting the backend, so the part that communicates with the hypervisor. And so the node daemon probably will remain Python, and the rest is scheduled to, in the long run, go to Haskell. At least these are the current plans. The question was what long run means. Maybe if we go back to the architecture, there's some other change of plans we currently have, is this monolithic master daemon is planned to be replaced by three daemons, one for the configuration, so writing the configuration, and that one probably will take over logging, one for the queue, and eventually the plan is to have the Ganetti jobs be just processed in the operating system, at least the running ones. And the plan is so kind of incrementally, once we get a new daemon that replaces part of the work of the master daemon, that will be rewritten in Haskell. And the time frame, well, till all the migration happens, we hope to do it in a year, but it's kind of incremental process to have more and more Haskell parts, but rough timeline, hopefully a year, maybe longer. The question was whether it's hard-coded to that one instance runs on two nodes, or if you have a kind of expensive storage thing. So first of all, this one primary-secondary is going to away with ZRVD9 anyway, hopefully soon. And the other is you can have use external, what Ganetti calls external storage. You have some storage solution that happens to be available on your node, and you just tell Ganetti how to access that. So you can use whatever external storage solution at your disposal and just tell, oh, this is the storage, use it. So that's what behind this shared storage. There, Ganetti says just one file in your file system and you have some other means of replication or just external. So there currently was some plans of better support for other storage solutions, but in general, you can just plug in an external storage solution. And then it will be considered as instance running on one node and can be restarted in all the nodes that have that storage solution available, which makes balancing and so on a lot more easy. The question was whether there are plans at Google to use Ganetti in the production fleet. I don't think so. So I'm not aware of any plans, and also the production, so the search engine and so on, is still a problem big enough though that it warrants to have one, in fact, several fully dedicated machines. There is no plans to use virtualization there, at least none that I'm aware of. Yeah? So the question was that if you do live migration, you have to have similar CPUs and so on, and whether Ganetti helps there. So that's one of the main reasons, or that's the way to deal with it is using the concept of node groups. So normally the assumption is that one node group is homogeneous enough that you can migrate instances, and Ganetti will always only try migration within the same node group. You can migrate an instance externally, but then the procedure is to shut it down, copy the image, start it again. That's the only way you migrate between node groups. So if you set up your node groups to reflect your physical hardware, then that works, and Ganetti takes care of that. So the question was, there's something like split brain prevention. Well, first of all, I should mention that master failover is always a manual process. You notice the master is gone, and you manually tell that node you're the new master. And we have some mechanism to prevent really two masters coming up, which we call voting. So if the master daemon starts up, the first thing is it asks all the nodes belonging to the cluster whether they believe that I'm the master. And only if the majority of nodes says, yes, I believe you are the master, then it will start. Otherwise, the process will immediately stop. So in the case one node goes away, at least you can't reach it. So the worst case is network outage. You fail over the new master. That will tell all the nodes, so I'm the new master. And that's a manual process. You say, this is what should become the new master. And then hopefully, the old master will somehow reboot. In the worst case, you power cycle it. And will then recognize, oh, no longer the majority of nodes believe that I'm the master, I will stop myself. And also kind of similar split plane situation, we have a watcher, another daemon on every node that checks periodically the configuration daemon, and that's why that needs to be that made for high throughput, whether the configuration believes that this node is offline. And if it finds out that actually my node is considered offline, it will stop all the virtual instances. That's the other danger. If you fail over instance and the node comes back and hasn't realized that it's supposed to be offline, then there is the watcher daemon stopping all the instances. And the same with the master. If it finds out that no longer the majority believes that I'm the master, I will stop the master daemon. Okay, thank you.